When Norm Rice ran for Seattle City Council in 1978, the city was just emerging from the Boeing bust. The big issues revolved around how to transform this regional hub into a forward-thinking international metropolis. Norm Rice fostered some of those transitions through his tenure on the city council and again two terms as Seattle mayor. After he left office, Norm Rice stayed in public service. He was a teacher, an activist, and most recently he's headed up the Seattle Foundation, a philanthropic organization. 35 years after that political debut, Norm Rice is stepping away from the public eye. He plans to retire from the Seattle Foundation in mid-2014 after they find a successor for him. Norm Rice stopped by the KUW studios just before Christmas to take a look back at his long career, and he reminded me that his first job was as a broadcast journalist. He says that is what pushed him to run for political office in the first place.
And the more I covered city government, the more I looked at public policy and the things that went around is actually getting more excited. As a reporter, you got to walk the halls, and there weren't any kind of barriers and doors and buttons that let you in, so you could buttonhole an elected official to have a very deep conversation about kinds of things.
I know that you took office in 78, so you probably ran in 77.
No, actually, I ran for an unexpired term, so I really got
78.
78. When I got elected, I was immediately almost sworn into office.
For people who weren't alive or don't remember what the city was like, I was wondering if you could describe the Seattle of the late 70s.
Well, I came up as a citizen and a resident of Mount Baker. There were a large number of community councils that had a lot of sway and started to exercising their power. And I lived in Mount Baker, which had one of the strongest community. And I became president of the Mount Baker Community Council. And so a lot of the land use issues, transportation issues, the amenities that are important about cities, actually came through the community councils.
So it was that sense of that we were a city of small communities. That's what I remember when I moved here in 1979.
Where do you live? I live in Roosevelt. I live in Mount Baker. I live in Queen Anne, Magnolia. But we rarely said, I live in Seattle. Place mattered in the city, and I think even today it still does. And that's the way you form your relationships with your colleagues, with your friends, and your schools.
Talking with Norman Rice, who is currently the head of the Seattle Foundation. He was a Seattle City Council member, a two-term mayor, a broadcaster, worked for the Puget Sound Council of Governments. It was too long. I can't say your whole resume.
I just couldn't
right
hold
now.
A job.
Yeah, maybe that was it. I know in 1985, you decided to run for mayor against the incumbent, Charlie Royer, also who a former broadcaster himself. What made you throw your hat in the ring?
Stupidity and naivety. I had honed my chops, so to speak, on being a finance and budget person who knew how to manage the budget. Mm. I thought running the city and how to manage the city was going to be a selling point. And I thought that I was ready for that. I wasn't. I always remember on election night after I lost, a good friend of mine, a longtime friend, came up to me and he kind of wagged his fingers and said, come here. He said to me, you know, you hire managers, you elect leaders. And I never forgot that because I think I was technically equipped to be a very good mayor. But I hadn't had what I considered the grounding and the seasoning to really think about a community and be a leader. And I had to hone those chops, so to speak.
So you stayed on the city council for another 4 years.
Yes, I did.
And ran again.
Successfully.
Successfully that time. And
no, but remember, in between, I also ran for Congress.
Oh, yeah.
I lost that one, too, but, you know, against Jim McDermott. So.
You did run for mayor. You won. And one of the first things that you did was convene an education summit. What were your concerns?
One of the things is when I successfully ran for mayor, there was an initiative to repeal busing in the city of Seattle. And there were a large number of people who were very much ambivalent and some of them really wanting to repeal it. And it became very divisive. And I had lost two races, so I wasn't thinking about jumping in the race because I'd been a little battered and bruised. But I kept waiting for someone to say, this isn't the issue we should be debating repealing busing. We got to talk about how can we get a better school system for all of our kids. And no one seemed to want to jump on it one way or the other, and none of the other candidates, at least I didn't hear them say that. And finally, at the midnight hour, I said, we've got to jump in and bring the city together.
One of the things that arose eventually out of that education summit was the families and education levy. It got me to thinking about, and I'm jumping ahead here, I'll jump back in time in a second, about your view on where we are citywide with education, because this has been an issue that you've followed. Are the schools at the place you would like them to be?
I don't think so. But that's a simple answer to a complex question, because right now there's so many barriers and challenges to educating our children that there isn't a silver bullet per se. But the real issue is that all of our children ought to have the opportunity to learn. There ought to be an environment where they can learn, and there ought to be assistance and help for those who need the help so that they can improve.
I'm talking with Norman Rice, former mayor of Seattle, head of the Seattle Foundation, for a few more months now. One other big legacy that people would point to, and I don't know if you do, is the change in downtown Seattle under your watch. What was your vision when you took over as mayor for what downtown Seattle should be?
Frederick and Nelson had closed. Kloffenstein had closed. On three corners of the main area of downtown, we had boarded up buildings. We had graffiti on all the buildings. There were people who were sleeping and camping out. It was getting to be horrendous. And I kind of stiffened my back when the downtown came and said, what are you going to do about this? And I kept trying to say to some of the downtown folks, what are you going to do about homelessness and the other issues too? Because it's not just a one-way street. We didn't talk much, and it lingered a while. There's a message to this. But one day after the Rodney King riots, we had an outbreak in the city that I hadn't seen before, where a lot of young people came downtown, broke windows and all. Not so much over Rodney King, but just as an opportunity to act up. But nonetheless, it was unsettling and troublesome. And I went to the Rotary the next week and asked downtown to help me create jobs for youth. And in less than 2 weeks, we raised over $1 million and got 800 job slots. And I sat down and said, look, if we can get this done, we can start going to look at downtown a different way. And we did, bit by bit. We looked at the transportation flow, Westlake Park, other kinds of things that are barriers to traffic moving through the city and where we're going. We started looking at elements that we could really start to change. We even had aggressive panhandling ordinance that we looked at. So I think what happened is an attitude of collaboration and working and listening together started to grow, and that helped us as we started to look at the right investments we need to have.
As I listen to you talk about downtown, I say, gee, some of this sounds really familiar. The last mayoral campaign, downtown was a big issue. Safety, public safety, homelessness, vagrancy, all that is still an issue. But that attitude that you just described seems missing.
I think the defining moment for that attitude, if you want to say it, or the positive attitude I thought we had in the Rice administration, actually occurred one night in my campaign office where I was calling people for votes. And I called a woman who said, I know who you are, and I'm not going to vote for you, and I'm going to vote against Mussing, but what do you have to say?
Great.
We had a conversation that night that was fascinating, and she listened to me. I listened to her. I told her my reasons, and after it was done, she said, well, I still don't know if I'm going to vote for you, but you know something? You heard me.
You were called Mayor Nice. The most recently defeated mayor was not called Mayor Nice. And he would say, he did say to me that he felt he did listen to people's concerns. Are we in a time where that kind of attitude of willingness is gone?
I think the verdict's out. I don't know where we are right now. There has to be some guiding principles of every administration that are clear. I didn't start out with those, but as we started evolving, looking at neighborhood planning and looking at the comprehensive plan for the city, the idea of environmental stewardship, economic opportunity, and social equity began to be the touch points. So whatever policy we had, what does it do for those things? And once we started showing that this is what we do to achieve it, we also gained some greater trust.
Any advice for Ed Murray, our incoming mayor?
Well, so far I think he's getting good grades for the way he's looking at his team, how he's building it up. There's still a long ways to go, but I think there is a value of being a legislator and going into being mayor. But the real thing is at some point in time, you have to lead. and the principles that you're leading in are really going to come through. I don't know if they came as soundly through in the campaign, but the campaign was about so many other things than about leadership and principles. And I think, but he has a slate that allows him, I think, to carve out a direction that can be very powerful. He's got a council that's going to be interesting too, but how he collaborates with them is really going to be important.
Well, we'll have to call you on that one when they're all sworn in.
Well, I was a council member, but I think as I stayed longer as mayor, I thought less as a council member, more as
the head of state there. Yeah. You have now spent a good portion of your adult life out of elected office. You have been a teacher. You've worked in the finance world. You've advised government, the Obama administration you've worked with as well. But I'm curious about the hat at the Seattle Foundation, because one thing that I've been thinking about, wondering about, is the role of private philanthropy mm-hmm. in creating the Seattle that we see in on the cusp of 2014. How do you see that role?
Well, you hit it right on the head. I when I was first asked, would I be interested in coming to the Seattle Foundation, I wasn't as sure in the sense of, you know, ex-mayor goes to foundation rather than
out to pasture,
rather than this foundation found a new leader. So I spent some time thinking about philanthropy and thinking about the overall objectives of the Seattle Foundation. And one of the things that the Seattle Foundation had at the time was a healthy community agenda. What are the elements that make up a healthy community? When I started looking at those elements, education, economic development, all the things that we really all know about, I said, that's what I've been working on. Mm. So now I don't really have to come to try to understand what that is. The real idea is how to put it in place for the region, because the foundation is King County. And what we did is we began to look at ways in which we could begin to develop strategies around this whole area, and I think that really began to help us go. Let me just have one thing, because the one thing that's great about philanthropy is people who become donors and want to be engaged, they have their own ideas about what they want, and so it is another, again, a conversation.
Well, one of the things that I got to thinking about not just the Seattle Foundation, but the role of money in the city, was that a lot of our infrastructure, Seattle Center is a case in point, is the result of a generation mm-hmm. of moneyed people. And Virginia and Bagley Wright maybe kind of topped the list mm-hmm. of people who really did shape, Space Needle, he built an icon, but shaped sort of how we were going to be as a city, not just building the buildings, but, you know, here's where I'm going to put my money. We should have an art museum. We should have theaters. We should have, you know, whatever people felt like they were going to have. And we were young enough that they really could have that kind of impact. And there was a lot of sort of gnashing of teeth as the generational the leaders of our corporations has changed, as the complexion of who had the money in town changed. And there seemed that there was some worry about, like, what was that agenda going to be? What were the .com execs right. going to want to fund? What were the technology execs interested in?
Well, I think that's what makes it exciting right now is because I really do believe, I think you described it, there used to be a gentry of folks who could come together and plan the city of Seattle, sometimes meet in the Rainier Club or other places and set the destiny of the city. But as time went on, the face of the city changed, the people changed. So you couldn't, in my mind, you couldn't just say, well, I'm going to go in a room and we'll tell all those other folks what we're going to do for them. Information, sharing of information, collaboration changed. And so now it takes a lot longer. I don't believe that it's we've got to go back to the old days. What we ought to do is understand how we can talk to people about the value set that you want for today. The waterfront is a classic example. There's a place for everyone on the waterfront. Don't think of it as for those people. Think about it as, how will I benefit? How will I like it? What will I do with my kids? And when you start to talk in terms about what a society can enjoy, then everybody can say, I see my face in that place.
So it's a way of framing.
Yes.
framing our future. So for you, who's still young leaving this job, retiring from public life, that was the headline on the press release, retiring.
I saw that too. But
not very retiring kind of as a personality, that's for sure. What are your dreams for this city as you shift to some other way of you know, involving yourself, because I'm sure you will.
Boy, I haven't written this out yet, but I guess so. You're lucky. You get the first answer. The biggest thing troubling me in our society today is equity and diversity and equality, and watching a whole generation of kids who aren't going to have that opportunity losing ground. How do we cover the ground? How do we galvanize people to understand that it can't be lost? This has to be remediated, and we have to move forward. So I think I want to work a lot more with young African-American boys, looking at test scores in areas. I think there's some challenging and wonderful programs that are going on. The Casey Family Program is looking at a program called Communities of Hope. We're looking at how do you maybe target zip codes and bring the resources to bear. And that's where I think philanthropy plays a role. I don't think we can beat a philanthropist over the head and say, this is what you ought to do. Mm-hmm. But we can sit down with philanthropists and say, here's the way we're charting how we want to move, and give them choices of what they might want to do with their philanthropy and build it around what they want. So you hear that theme coming back and forth. What do you want? Mm-hmm. And here's how we can work this together. Not everything is going to be that simple, but it is a way in which people have that trust. We talked earlier today about a program we had at the foundation, Give Big. Give Big was a phenomenal effort in so many different ways, but what it did is it democratize philanthropy.
And I'll just explain, if for some reason you didn't have an email from some nonprofit asking you to give money on Give Big Day, it was a day that was organized by the Seattle Foundation, and hundreds of area, maybe thousands, took part. It felt like thousands, asking you to donate online during this day. There were matching funds for some of them, and collectively, how much did you raise this year?
Well, now is $25 million that we've raised for the three years going.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, and it's not big money. It's small dollars. But it's really been exciting because people can say, here's how I can make a difference. Organizations are learning how to organize themselves to benefit there. I think some people had not galvanized their base as well to realize their base gives them a lot more opportunity than what they have.
No.
And now I know, because I've been deluded with all kinds of calls and postcards and everything else, but it was exciting. I go back to philanthropy, one more thing, which I really think is important, and it's probably the DNA of me. The foundation can be a convener of people around new ideas and create collaborative kinds of efforts where people can be future investors. That's what it does better, because we're not bound by politics or bound by a political agenda. We're bound by the idea of what makes a great a community.
Norm Rice, good luck on the next chapter of your life.
The best is yet to come.
That's about three times as